And tonight the story is The Mirror Without a Wall. And it's a very short, very short story, so that we may find a second one too. That what I'm using is a book on fables that is written by a woman in Minneapolis by the name of Bara Kamin. And there's some delightful fables that she writes herself and has used for a variety of different groups. And their stories, fables, well, I love stories of all kinds. Fables are a little different. The meaning might be a little more elusive, but there are themes and in the story, in the fable, that we can identify with, that might have something to say about where we're at in our journey. And it's going to be different. It's going to be different for each one of us, because we each bring our own experience and our own dreams and hopes and whatever we have to this experience of listening to stories. Stories we can listen to for pleasure or for self-reflection, or to discover some deeper philosophical meaning that we can relate to the ordinary events in our own life. So the meanings are not always obvious, and the message may be somewhat elusive, but what I'd like us to do tonight, we usually start out with centering, where we leave all our baggage and things outside, all the busyness of the day, and just bring ourselves to this place and to this time and space and be present to ourselves and to the group and to the story. Then I'll read the story, and what I'd like you to do is each one of us reflect for a few minutes and then either do some drawing or some writing, whichever feels more comfortable for you, or if you prefer to just sit and think about it and reflect without doing that, that's okay too. But some way of getting into the story and seeing if there's anything there that might have some meaning for you. And then we'll have some time for sharing. And like I say, this one is a short story. If we have more time, we'll take another one and do something with that too. Oh, thank you. The mood, the mode is a bit different in here tonight than in the other room or some of the other meetings you've been at, which has been more discourse and getting into a topic and talking about it. Tonight we're going to move into a more quieter, reflective space. So if you can get comfortable in your chairs. And then just close your eyes and shut out the rest of the world outside and around you. And take some deep breaths. And just let out all the tension that you are experiencing, all the baggage that you have brought with you. And as you inhale, take in that wonderful oxygen, that life-giving force that goes to every part of your body and connects all the different parts of who you are. And also, as you breathe out, know that you are connecting with the outside world as well, that taking in and breathing out. So focus on your breath, slowly and deeply. Breathing in and breathing out. And as you do this, be aware of the letting go of the relaxation. Be aware of becoming more centered in this time and in this place. And when you are ready, open your eyes and be present in this time and place. Once upon a time, long ago, there was an old woman who never had a mirror on her wall. With no looking glass to give her praise or turn her away, she never ever wondered who was the fairest of them all. One day, while walking in the woods not far from home, the old woman came upon a rushing brook. As she passed by, the water is still just long enough for her to catch a glimpse of her own smile. Startled by the sight of her face in the shallow sea, the old woman, in an attempt to erase her face, splashed about in the water with tiny ripples. But with each turn, her body became bigger and bigger in the moving mirror. Although the old woman's face was smudged with coal and wrinkles scored her cheeks, until the moment of her reflection, there was never a time when anything but beautiful came to mind. What she had on her skin mattered not. When the old woman was young, she learned from her mama, who was blind, that though the beauty upon one's face is a gift, the beauty that rests within is the most cherished treasure of all. The old woman knew that even on the days when she put on her Sunday best, her soul was as naked as the day her body was born. Leaving her image to rest at the water's edge, the old woman quickly discovered that nothing stands still by the stream. As her portrait, made of the shadows of the sea, floated by with the current that moved the water down a steady path, the old woman saw the truth about life resting on the bottom of the sands. The eyes through which we see are buried in the heart, while one's beauty is forever reflected in the stream that flows through the center of every being. The end. Okay. connected with any events in your daily life or anything you know about yourself.
Is that a contemporary fable?
Mm-hmm.
I'm always curious about why there's always a wood nearby. Somebody might be old, but it's the first time you ever notice anything about, or whatever the story is going to be about. You know, it seems that the physical space is near home, kind of. And yet, whatever is going to be learned is new and not come upon before this particular
moment. Because the stream is close to her.
The stream is
close to her home.
Close to home. Okay.
So she, you would think she used to walk by
she
there.
She might have gone by or gone there often, or maybe this discovery earlier, or
so
I
why,
didn't end up writing about that, but I was curious.
Yeah. Why? So why this time?
There's always a wood in a fairy tale.
Yes,
a
wood.
Yeah. It's always not so far away from home.
It was long ago, but it's not so far away, right?
I was intrigued that, if I remember it correctly, she seemed to be disturbed that she saw her smile. That was the one feature, wasn't it, that she saw reflected.
That's right, yeah.
Was that was disturbing, and she
disturbed the
wires.
It's so short. Could you read the whole thing over again, and then?
Sure.
If we could just reflect on what we thought we heard.
It is hard sometimes to read with one reading. Once upon a time, long, long ago, there was an old woman who never had a mirror on her wall. With no looking glass to give her praise or turn her away, she never ever wondered who was the fairest of them all. One day, while walking in the woods not far from home, the old woman came upon a rushing brook. As she passed by, the water stilled just long enough for her to catch a glimpse of her own smile. Startled by the sight of her face in the shallow sea, the old woman, in an attempt to erase her face, splashed about in the water with the tiny ripples. But with each turn, her body became bigger and bigger in the moving mirror. Although the old woman's face was smudged with coal and wrinkles scored her cheeks, until the moment of her reflection, there was never a time when anything but beautiful came to her mind. What she had on her skin mattered not. When the old woman was young, she learned from her mama, who was blind, that though the beauty upon one's face is a gift, the beauty that rests within is the most cherished treasure of all. The old woman knew that even on the days when she put on her Sunday best, her soul was as naked as the day her body was born. Leaving her image to rest at the water's edge, the old woman quickly discovered that nothing stands still by the stream. As her portrait, made of the shadows of the sea, floated by with the current that moved the water down a steady path, the old woman saw the truth about life resting on the bottom of the sands. The eyes through which we see are buried in the heart. While one's beauty is forever reflected in the stream that flows through the center of every being.
Well, the story made me think about mirrors and what we use them for, beauty. I began to realize that most of the reasons we use a mirror is to check out or improve what others are going to see when they look at us physically. otherwise, you know, at the entry hall of the house, so that as, just before we leave, we can check and make sure it's right. Mm-hmm. When guests come in, they have a chance to fix their hair, or above the kitchen, the bathroom sink, where we shave or wash our face. Led me to a poem anyway.
So you wrote a poem. Would you be willing to share that at a start?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
And I do hope the tape is back on.
We put our mirrors in all the wrong places. Above the bathroom sink, inside the purse, at the door where we come in or leave, in the car to see where we have been. We want to see what others see when they see us. We want to see our face so we can fix it. We want to put the tie or hem aright. The mirrors help us set our public face. We should take all these mirrors down and put them up where we will see our soul. Within our lover's eyes, our children's heart, between the bread and wine, upon the cross, and last of all, somewhere behind, so we can see not whence we came, but where our soul will go.
That's beautiful, David. Mm-hmm. Very profound. Thank you.
Thank you.
That is a mirror without a wall.
Mm-hmm.
Take down the mirrors. And see the image. In the places that matter.
It's hard to figure out a physical place to put the mirrors to, so we see ourselves at crucial moments, but I couldn't think of any place in the house.
It is funny though, here as you get used to them in certain places. In our farm home where I grew up, after we had all left and my brother and his wife had their family there, they moved a mirror from one place where it had always been. And I always go looking for myself on that wall. And I can't walk by it without expecting that there should be a mirror there. And it isn't really strange.
I remember a man that I worked with on the psychiatric unit, adult psychiatry at the university. He came in, and after his parents had died, he went into the house and shot with a shotgun every mirror and every window.
My goodness.
It was such a violent act. But there was something about, and I think when you talk about being reflected in people, the eyes of people you love, there's a lot of pain and anger in that situation. And hadn't had that kind of reflection at all, so it's going to destroy every reminder of that.
I wrote down a series of, this isn't really a poem, it's not connected at all, it was just some stream of consciousness stuff, but I put one comment that sort of fits that. Usually I travel fast, try not to look too hard or too long in any one pool of wisdom, can't trust its purity. Poison can be left by anyone, the pool always in a wood not far from home. I don't know if it's in speech or a class or something, but that phrase about poisoning the well, is the poisoning the well of an idea. You know, somebody just puts something into it and suddenly you can't think of the idea purely because another kernel of information or something has changed its meaning. Yes.
Would you read that again, Ken?
Well, it's just a little section. I don't know if it hangs together. I'll start at the beginning. I was thinking of the word mirror and then playing with it. Mirror or mirror reflection, or water shifting with the least moment, or my rearview vision of the place I just left. Usually I travel fast, try not to look too hard or too long in any one pool of wisdom. Can't trust its purity. Poison can be left by anyone, the pool always in a wood. Why had not that old woman seen her own face smile before, old face tumbling over pebbles just after the glance that cast it there, face skipping downstream to a juncture of new converging waters? If she dipped a copper cup into that face and raised it to drink, might she thirst no more? Still the puzzle. The closer to her face the cup came, the younger would grow her reflection. And at the last minute, just before slaking her great thirst, she threw the remaining reflection over her left shoulder, and hearing the water fall, returned the mirror to its source. I know where it's going.
Downstream. Downstream. Joining that.
It's just a series of...
That the main street, the stream of life, is something that comes through.
You pick the fact that the poison appeared is probably the most important thing in this little bunch of sentences.
Say more about that.
I don't know what to say about it. I think it's...
But it's significant for you in some way.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something that you don't know might be deadly.
Mm-hmm. And in the story, would that relate at all to the fact that she saw her smile and the first time she had seen her face? It doesn't tell us that it really changed her thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it could.
Mm-hmm.
If you began to see yourself as being fair and then moving on from that.
It's a very cryptic story, you know. About her mother, who teaches her that it's purity of heart. And
I was just thinking, you know, where your thoughts have taken me, and it isn't what's in here at all, but what just hearing you, I keep coming back to the fact her mother, who was blind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Right. When you said, "I wonder what the poison is," and so then I'm thinking, you know, the fact. She certainly sort of modeled, because it wasn't, she knew her mother didn't know what, I mean, it wasn't important for her to see physical beauty.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so she saw no reason to take time to see that either. She only looked for what was inside.
Mm-hmm. And her mother wouldn't have had mirrors around then reflecting images either.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the modeling, you know.
Yeah, the poison about a mirror might be that we're always using those mirrors for self-improvement, you know, because we want to look right. That's what was occurring to me. I think that the way in which most of us can't stand the way we look in pictures, you know, in photographs.
Yes.
Somebody else would think, what a great picture, but I look terrible. And we're all self-conscious about how we look to other people, so we keep looking into a mirror to try to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a kind of poison, because it feeds our vanity. It feeds that sense of surface beauty instead of the inner beauty that the blind mother, because she hasn't had the mirror experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, you aren't seeing accurately, usually. I mean, when we look at ourselves in the mirror, we're seeing right face on, and most every other person that ever looks at us never sees you that way.
Yeah.
You see you much more in total or sideways or whatever. It's like an inaccurate view that you get, but that's what you're going by.
As well as seeing different facets of you as person, personality, too. When checking out our image in the mirror before leaving, because we want to make sure we look right, so we're meeting somebody else, we're anticipating that somehow they're going to be impressed, or they're going to judge us on the way we look, And they're seeing us differently too, just like in the photo. They're seeing many different aspects of the self, not just this this frontal view of how we want to appear.
I'm thinking a little while ago, Mary Grip was here with her mother. This is someone from St. Olaf. The mom was here, who's older, and was working up in the hotel. And as she was saying her farewell piece, one of the things she said is that none of my friends at home have ever seen me in anklets with a skirt. And what else was it? Not combing my hair. And,
Tennis shoes, wasn't it?
Yeah, a couple of things. But, you know, she had this image of herself and what other people expected her to look like very firmly in place. And up here, had left it behind and had found that very odd.
But a freedom here to do that.
To do it.
And then changing that when she looked around.
Hadn't ever gone to the bridge without her nylon.
Others have some impressions that you might be willing to share. Any thoughts about this?
Well, I was thinking of how images of other people play into my life. So I have just written images, how important they seem at times, but what is valuable? Mirror reflections or impressions of the heart? I choose impressions of the heart, yet I know the majority of my judgments and acceptances of people are based on what I see. That precious commodity of time sometimes precludes getting to know the real you. And sometimes my choices of perceptions get in the way. Like the guest server at our feeding program who said to the poor whom she served, "But they're so polite, I'm amazed." How often we think something is true, but to our amazement it is not. What if I chose to believe that all people were beautiful and capable of goodness? So let me open my heart as well as my eyes. Let me love more and judge less. Let me be as accepting as God's grace is of me.
Thank you. That's very well said.
I tried to stretch, you know, with the crayons and paper there. I thought, rather than just picking up a pencil and trying to put in words, I thought, I'm just going to see what happens. You know, and I really struggled with, you know, what lines. I started with two lines. Well, that was okay. I'm certainly not an artist, but first I tried to get, you know, the flow of the stream moving down. And her reflection was in there, and that's why I asked to see that last one, because it said, and then I tried to think, how do I depict other people? So the community or, you know, where she lived, and I did get a couple of trees. It's in the woods, but but town, and that, and seeing the reflection in the center of others, and I thought, that's probably more how she saw herself, is how she reacted, or how she felt she fit into her community. And I guess, you know, as I think about that, reflecting on myself, I think that's how I many times see myself, is how I fit into
different
community or
places and
settings.
Mm-hmm.
Or
so that's the reflective, how that sense of connection and interaction and acceptance. And
I suspect it says something about you, Dorothy, that you came to the community idea right away, because in a way the story is a lonely story.
Yes.
Just a mom, older woman. Now the older woman is alone.
Living by herself.
And you don't get any.
But I know I'm a people. I'm energized by people. I'm not a person who enjoys being off by myself.
And you moved the sense of community being houses, so that there's houses usually have many people, and too. It's not just some individuals that you're connecting with, which is interesting.
I'm trying to figure out the significance of the bakery.
I'd like to eat too.
and I was fighting between, am I trying to just, what do I see in this story, or what's me? And and that's where my tension was.
Well, the bakery suggests food, which suggests community.
Which is community.
Yes, yes.
Breaking the bread.
Mm-hmm. Breaking the bread, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Eating together is always a sign of friendship and togetherness.
Mm-hmm. And the stream goes through the center.
Mm-hmm. And they kind of overlap, you know. Her reflection was here, and that's what I had in there first. But then these ended up on top of it, mm-hmm. or superimposed, and mm-hmm. getting mixed up together. Other people can see more enough than I thought of it.
So the mirrors there are within the community, and not just mm-hmm. hanging on walls. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which, symbolically, then, is in the story, is in this stream that runs through each one of us.
Each one of us, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, you had some similar ideas there with, would you consider reading yours again?
Images, how important they seem at times. But what is valuable, mirror reflections or impressions of the heart? I choose impressions of the heart, yet I know the majority of my judgments and acceptances of people are based on what I see. That precious commodity of time sometimes precludes getting to know the real you, and sometimes my choices of perceptions get in the way. Like the guest server at our feeding program who said of the poor whom she served, but they're so polite, I'm amazed. How often we think something is true, but to our amazement, it is not. What if I chose to believe that all people were beautiful and capable of goodness? So let me open my heart as well as my eyes. Let me love more and judge less. Let me be as accepting as God's grace is of me.
That would be a very nice matins.
Mm-hmm. But you really get at some of the tension there between what we often end up doing, you know, like David was talking about in the poem too, how we want people to perceive us, and our perceptions of other people too.
Well, and when you think of that story, you think, wouldn't it be sometimes nice if we were all blind? And so that only beauty came to mind, and yet I use my eyes much too much, mm-hmm. and my heart much too little. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that tension between the heart and the eyes, and too, yes.
Because I think blind people can teach us a lot about acceptance, and perhaps mm-hmm. trust.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else want to do any sharing?
Similar struggle between the ideal and what we really do, and that was in fact the first thing that came to mind, which is like basically a big struggle about everything in my life. And I think that I haven't necessarily given up on it being possible to like see, in this case with our hearts, but it seems like it takes a lot of work. And then I was thinking about the difference between a mirror and a river, what the differences would be. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the river's got motion, and the last line was that the river flows out of every being.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like we have to choose to make beauty around us as well.
The stream that flows through the center of everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's actual choice we have to make, so it is discipline instead of just something simple, wish fulfillment, or wanting it badly enough. It's not that easy. And I guess the other thing was that the river is distorted surface instead of a smooth surface, mm-hmm. and that gives you a more imperfect picture, and yet we all, well, maybe not everybody, but I would certainly choose a river over a mirror any day if I had to
sit somewhere or something. And it's that natural sort of imperfection that we find really beautiful. And so it seems like we should learn something from that and not always wanting a flat, smooth kind of appearance. And then I picked up on the kind of life, water is life, that you were sort of getting to at the very end of your poem. The river that wells up within the story of the Samaritan woman and Jesus. And so if the river and the beauty go together, then it seems like life and beauty go together. And this is like another theme that's come up in my life a lot. You know, it's like, I remember thinking, I want to live, I want to be alive. And if finding beauty in like, not in superficial appearances, but in other people's hearts and seeing who they really are, then if we can begin to see beauty that way, then that's when we really get this life that's being talked about. And I think that's why people, maybe like people have that connection within them, and that's why they search for beauty, but they get stuck on the superficial level and they think that's where they found it at, and that's how they continue life, when in fact they need to get beyond that to this other type of beauty to really find life. That's basically it.
Many different images and insights. Mm-hmm. And, were able to glean from that.
Yeah.
And the idea of the mirror being stationary, mm-hmm. and there's nothing dynamic about it all, it just is there and it reflects right back at you, but with the stream being in motion and all a very dynamic action, and also then there would be depth there too.
Yeah. Where this is what we're talking about before. Mm-hmm,
with the reflection back, so you can see many levels. It's not just the flat surface as you get in the mirror.
I liked your idea too of choosing, if we had a choice, most of us would choose the river over the mirror to be with.
Yes,
that's great. Healthy. Mm-hmm.
You want to spend time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think yearning for change is possible. Gain the river.
Yes, there's always a path. That's an mm-hmm. insight too. Mm-hmm. Seem like it rules the heart, don't they?
That's right.
I don't want to pass up anybody if you really want to. If you don't, that's all right too. So.
I think I'll go home and change one of my mirrors.
Anything there?
Well, I guess just that Allison and I always have these struggles over God and that kind of thing anyway. And this thing, like, I guess like, there were a lot of like random thoughts, but in the end it came up to be something like, and my sense is Allison is always like, I mean, Allison and I always have these room arguments, but I mean, Allison was like, is talking about like the mystery of God, and I always want something really obvious. I'm like a burning bush, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And whereas Allison always like thinks, you know, like the mystery is really, you know, beautiful and profound and that kind of thing, and it's really important, like to have the faith and that sort of thing. And I was thinking the same sort of like thoughts, like, you know, why is it that God gave us these sort of exteriors that don't, you know, necessarily reflect like our souls and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. and like why he would give us this kind of struggle, and like, it just sort of reminded me of like the sort of struggle with God in the first place, like why he doesn't like make it really obvious like to everybody that he exists, and I don't know, it was like, I just wanted to bring that up because that was just my life, but that's it. So I was just basically just thinking that sort of thing through, and I never come up with a really good conclusion to that, so, and I still didn't, so.
I can't remember if it was a class or someone who said to me the biggest problem God gave God's self was giving humans free will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was the gift we were given, and made it a huge struggle for both of us.
And the body, although it's what we live in, and we couldn't get along without it, and yet our sensory perceptions we have that mm-hmm. connect us with this outside world and take in these impressions and connect with people and nature, and so there are these avenues, these corridors that that we have, that somehow connect with others and with the things that we see beyond ourselves. The eyes are very important to me, and I don't know where I'm going with this, but I had a kind of womb-like drawing that I felt somehow at the beginning of life. The eyes, they're looking out, and yet they become more than that, and they are including in a stream. There are eyes looking in, but they're also part of the stream. The I also becomes the I, yes, the I, the self, that has choice and has free will and can.
From this distance, it also looks a little like a mask.
Like a mask?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe looking at, so I'm going to have to work on that a little bit more. But the sense of the womb, being in the womb and starting out with not having any mirror there, but the heartbeat of the mother and the water, the stream that the child is a part of in the womb. And there's a beginning there, an innocence there, a not knowing of something that we get as we are reflected in the mirrors later. So I don't know what I'll do with that. Well, we're going to have to stop because we've already gone over a few minutes. And thank you all. It's amazing to me what comes out of a simple story, how it touches the lives and makes connections for you. And thank you all for sharing with us tonight.